Bonjour, bon après-midi à tous. Donc le challenge que l'on vous propose cet après-midi en...
Good afternoon everyone. The challenge that we are going to take this afternoon is an exceptional session that you can listen to directly in English, or you can also listen to it in French thanks to the headsets that were distributed to you. I have the great pleasure to welcome two exceptional conferences this afternoon. One is with Kate Morse and Damien Schitz from Boston, from the Center for Medical Simulation in Boston, affiliated with the Harvard University. And the second one was David Goland, who is the current chair of SESAMI, which is the European Society for Simulation. David and Kate, it's over to you. Thank you.
I have no idea what he said, but I'm sure it was something nice. Good afternoon.
Yep.
So, hi, Kate.
Hi, Damien.
Clement asked that Kate and I come to Caen to talk with you this afternoon about Le Good Judgment. And we are just so pleased to be able to do that, to have arrived a few days ago and have a one-day workshop with 20 French and Swiss participants, professionals in simulation who are doing interventions in their healthcare settings and their schools, as well as doing faculty development. It was just a pleasure to be able to do that, and we're thankful to Sofra Sim, as well as the University of Caen and the Chu Hospital, and thank you very much for coming after lunch and tolerating the translation. Clément m'a demandé de faire la présentation en français. Je pense que ce n'est pas une bonne idée, mais peut-être après on peut pratiquer pour moi. Le free French lessons, c'est bon. Je voudrais que... Catherine, vous présentez, s'il vous plaît.
Yes, thank you, Damien. So I'd like to welcome you back after lunch and share a couple of things I've learned since I've come, which is we need to change our entire lunch menu in Boston to include really much better food and the wine, which will improve our courses. So I'm Kate Morse, or Catherine, and I'm a nurse practitioner by trade, and that means that I've worked in the clinical space for over three decades, caring for critically ill patients. And nurse practitioners are sort of at your fellow level in the United States and Canada, and I originally come from Canada. And I'm sorry to say that 12 years of speaking French in Canada has long since left me, which is a reflection of how long I've been in the States. But when I hear, I remember a lot in little tiny phrases. But it encourages me to start practicing again, so I'm very happy about that. And at the Center for Medical Simulation, I'm the Associate Director of Educational Leadership and International Programs, which is a really long title, to say that I work with simulation centers and health organizations who are interested in moving their simulation agendas forward, integrating it into their clinical spaces, creating research projects, creating a reputation, and sometimes working with other centers in their regional area. And I teach with Damien, and we're part of a larger interprofessional team at the Center for Medical Simulation. And I think that's all I have to say.
Also, my name is Damien Schiel. I'll do a more formal introduction now. Share with you that my background is in medicine. I'm an emergency physician. I spend about a day a week at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, where I see patients and train residents, medical students, and work in interprofessional teams. I do spend the bulk of my time as the senior director at the Center for Medical Simulation, which is an independent nonprofit organization that is housed within the confines of the greater Boston simulation community, which includes various teaching hospitals. And our main efforts there are divided between teaching practicing clinicians and intact teams, all about decision-making, crisis management, and Dr. David Graham will be talking a bit about that, so we'll have some areas of common interest, but we'll be sticking to the education area, which is our other main area, teaching formateurs like you, teaching the teachers. That's a big interest of ours. I also volunteer with the Society for Simulation in Healthcare, which is an international organization that promotes simulation in healthcare, the profession. And I also have a role with the editorial board of Advances in Simulation, which is the journal of CSAM, and I hope that many of you are CSAM members and will be attending in Bilbao later this year. By way of disclosures, Kate and I would like to let you know that we don't have any commercial interest with any of the manufacturers of products that are related to simulation or pharmaceutical device industry. We do, as I mentioned, work at a nonprofit, and we hold courses, particularly around the topic of debriefing, feedback, and difficult conversations, and the good judgment approaches really our philosophy, not just towards faculty development and debriefing, but also other healthcare conversations. And we offer courses both in Boston and away. As I mentioned, we had the pleasure of being here this week. So what we'd like to do this afternoon is primarily avoid a nice nap. I do not want you to get so relaxed and comfortable in your seat that you'll miss this opportunity. And so I have a few introductory words, but we'll quickly get you working in pairs, and that's why I ask that you sit closer to us and also that you try to sit within an interprofessional group. Because at the end of the day, we would be very happy if you could appreciate different disciplinary and professional perspectives, have a greater interest and curiosity about the frames of references, what are the thoughts and drivers of behavior in those professions, and be able to discuss the benefits and differences of simulation-based interprofessional education, which we will call SIMBI, and IPSIM, or interprofessional simulation, and we'll get into the details of those differences. So I see some of you nodding in the audience because this, for some of you, this will be building on what you've already gotten to know, either by reading some of our papers or by coming to one of our courses or workshops at a meeting like this. What will be our approach? We'd like to share with you a bit about the good judgment approach and have you get a bit familiar with what that is and how it works for us in our work. Activate your prior knowledge and learning by doing an exercise in pairs. Then we'll dive a little deeper into what are the interprofessional competencies and what are some of the aspects of interprofessional education worth bringing to the simulation environment. And then finally, loop back to the good judgment approach and apply your newfound skills with the same pair or a new one if you prefer. So what is the good judgment approach and what does that mean to me? So I would say the core pillars of the good judgment approach as it applies to teaching in the clinical setting or teaching with simulation is that I have a stance of curiosity and respect towards my learner. I'm curious about the thought processes that are going on in their mind. In addition, as an explanatory or diagnostic of why they performed the particular activity the way they did it. And I have respect that they are trying their best, that they're coming to this activity hoping to do something good. Just like we approach error in a new era of safety too, you might look at an error as a puzzle to be solved, not as a crime to be punished. And I'll have a little more words about that stance. Our strategy, therefore, is to uncover the frames of reference, what are the thought processes in their minds, and We do that by using advocacy inquiry, and I'd be happy to say that you'll be learning a little bit of that today too. So central to my stance of curiosity and respect is the idea that everyone that comes to an activity at the Center for Medical Simulation or who I'm working with side by side in the clinical environment is intelligent, capable, well-trained, cares about doing their best, and wants to improve. And as I'm looking at them, I'm going to be interested in what they're doing, what they're thinking, and we'll be looking to work with them in the debriefing to uncover that and perhaps help them shift. The respect comes in terms of valuing them as an agent of both clinical activity and as their own agent of change, and a meaning maker that really is not, is very different than someone that is, when you think of education as empty vessels that need to be filled with knowledge in their brain. So I'm stick to emergency medicine. I don't do brain transplantation. That's my philosophy for education as well. So many of us practice in interprofessional teams, and I'm thankful to Guillaume from the organizing group who shared with me the backgrounds, the professional backgrounds that you shared. So I understand that there are people in this audience from at least these professions and others. And so I'd like to ask you, if you're sitting next to someone that with whom you share a profession, look around you. If you have the same profession of the person next to you, I'll ask you to move and find someone of a different profession. If you're sitting alone, get closer to somebody else. And please, you know, we're American, bear with us. Okay, as you're getting comfortable, I'd like, and some of you are already doing this, please introduce yourself, your name, where you're coming from, and your profession, and I'll give you a few minutes to do that. Okay, so now that you are comfortable with your practice partner, I'd like to tell you a story from Bellevue Hospital, where I, before I moved to Boston about a year or so ago, I spent 6 years working at Bellevue Hospital. And that's one of the oldest, well, by our standards, because it's about 150 years old, so by our standards, it's an old hospital. And it's one of the largest public health systems and in the heart of New York City. And I was a trauma team leader on duty that day. I'm going to tell you this clinical story because I want you to work, do an exercise based on this story with your partner. So we got, in the U.S., we don't send the physicians out in the ambulance. The paramedics, who is part of our interprofessional team, they're extremely well-trained and they have many tools at their disposal. They respond out with the fire crew and call us to give us a notification. So I got a notification from the fire department of New York saying that they were going to bring a 32-year-old woman who was underneath the subway car. And she had had both of her lower extremities amputated traumatically. They had applied the tourniquets and she was stable. And that they would be joining us in 8 minutes and that we should be ready with the highest level of trauma activation. So the patient was stable. She indeed had bilateral low extremity amputations with tourniquets applied. Her heart rate was over 140 and she was awake, talking, sweaty, yelling, "I'm in so much pain, I'm in so much pain, I don't want to die." So we remained cool, calm, and collected. The nurses, get IV access. The residents or registrars prepare intubation medications. Those are given safely. They're dosed appropriately. The patient goes to sleep calmly. Tube is inserted. Chest x-rays is obtained to confirm the placement. Central lines are inserted. And the CAT scanner is made available, so we're going to join our radiology technicians, another part of the interprofessional team. And all of this happens in the span of about 11 minutes. And subsequently, this is what our workplace looks like. So with that story in mind, I'd like for you to work with your pair and try out an advocacy. So what do we mean by this? It's just two steps. With the partner that you've chosen, say what you see. Just describe what you see in the photograph that you think is interesting, and then share your point of view. I think, I see that the floor is red, and I think that's a very good color, because if you should have blood on the floor, you wouldn't notice it, and you would think it's nice and clean. So that could be your perspective, an example. So. Please go ahead and take a couple of minutes to work with your partner here and try out this advocacy. Afterwards, I'll be asking for a few samples to see what you talked about. Go ahead. Okay, take about un minute plus, s'il vous plaît, et on va parler. Okay, so j'aime beaucoup l'énergie dans la chambre, ça c'est magnifique. Je voudrais vous retourner avec moi un peu, je sais que n'a pas d'auriculaire. Alors, so I'd like to get a sense from some of you, if you don't mind talking about what two professions were in your pair and what are the things you talked about. And if you don't mind, raise your hand. I have some colleagues here who will be coming with a microphone. So, who would be willing to share what you talked about, what you found interesting about the photograph here? Okay.
So I am in the Merchant Navy.
Okay.
And my colleague is an airplane pilot.
Okay.
So we're not exactly in the medical stuff. But still, it's two different jobs. What we saw is a hell of a mess. And we said, well, if this happens in a plane or on the bridge of a ship, wow, it's bad news.
Great, thank you. So there are some things that he sees that he interprets as a mess, and he was in a on the ship or on the bridge, it would be a problem. And maybe some of us are going to be seeing it differently. So let's see some other groups here. Amba.
Well, I see the person is alone, and I wonder to know where is the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm. And what professions are you representing?
Just like you, I'm a HRC practitioner and is a nurse in operating room for anesthesia.
Yeah, so the patient and and some of the team went to the CAT scanner, and one of our nurse colleagues is left to work to prepare for when they return. So great, I like that observation. Other observations? If you can raise your hand in advance, then the next microphone will come to you.
Okay, so Laurent Matatia.
What profession?
I'm an anesthesiologist.
Okay, any language is fine. We have translation to both both directions.
So I'm an anesthetist and his emergency medicine physician. First thing we suspected that a lot was done in a very short time.
Huh. It's not a mess. They were just going quickly.
And the second thing is, why did they throw it on the ground and not in the dustbin? And there's something on the dustbin. It seems
yes,
like there's something on the dustbin.
The central venous catheter kit is on the dustbin. It's being used as a table, so it can't be used as a dustbin to place. Oh, that is indeed very curious and an interesting strategy, using all resources. Okay, I'd like to take one more and then move on from here. Is there anybody from maybe a different professional perspective? I see a hand here.
Je suis psychologue et mon binôme.
Testing the English channel. Okay, so he was saying, I'm a psychologist.
Dans le domaine du nucléaire,
working in nuclear industry, and next to me works in health, and we see that it is a mess, definitely a mess, but we do think that things are organized. What is on the floor and what is different from what is up above and what is above can still be used. And you can see a lot of labels at the top, on top of the furniture, and on the edge of that furniture, on the left, you also bits and pieces of tape, as if people were ready to act if something new arose and they could step in very quickly. So it does look like it's a huge mess, but it's organized chaos.
That's very interesting. I mentioned it was a public hospital, and just so that you can get a sense of what life is like in the U.S., this tape is double duty. It's to prepare to tape the tube on the patient, but it's also holding the door closed. So thank you for taking that first leap towards practicing together. Some of the things that you described, the objects here, things that different members of the team must use or do together, could be considered a boundary object. And this is a concept from sociology of science, where they describe that there are certain shared domains between different groups, and that artifact of culture, it's a little bit of a sociological, anthropological view, that artifact of culture can indeed be a source of conflict. And if you've studied conflict, you know that conflict could be seen as a productive conflict. So by resolving the conflicts amongst groups, you can have some progress. And I like this lens of objects or events in healthcare as boundary objects, because it really makes us change from the certainty of knowing what they are to the curiosity of different perspectives and perhaps resolving some of the conflicts together. So the electronic health record, the chart where we all document whether you're a pharmacist, a nurse, a physical therapist, even a physician, that in it, we use it differently, and that could be a source of conflict in my experience. How we define roles and responsibilities, the policies, how you assess a patient, different ways of examining a patient if you're a cardiologist or an anesthetist or an orthopedist or an emergency physician or a nurse practitioner, you're going to auscultate the patient with a different interest to a different degree. Anyways, patient-centered care, coordination of care, even safety, patient safety, health outcomes, how we define them. I think these are the boundary objects of interest. To me, this is a really productive area to both teach and learn about, and in particularly in our context, to be the subject of a debriefing. So I'd like to, having set the stage and warmed us up to think interprofessionally, I'd like to hand off to my colleague, Kate. We're modeling here an interprofessional team, and she's going to carry on to help us see more about the value of interprofessional education and how to apply it in SIM.
So Damien gave you an example of practicing together as an interprofessional team, and the paradox has been that we have always practiced interprofessionally, but on this side of the fence, we have rarely educated interprofessionally, and we must have believed that there was some magical event that happened from the day that I graduated to the day I walk in the hospital, and I now understand how to work with different teams and different professions. So we've found out that that doesn't really work well, and that we can do a better job on this. So in 2015, the Institute of Medicine presented a report talking about the impact of interprofessional education on collaborative practice. I think sometimes when people hear this, they think 2015, this was a long time ago, it's 2018, we should be further ahead. And my reframe around that is I know that it takes 8 to 10 years for an evidence-based practice to get into clinical practice consistently. So we're in very early stages here, and we should be starting, we should be at some point thinking about interprofessional education on the academic side, but you're starting where you start. So if you haven't started yet, that's okay. This is a perfect opportunity. If you're already somewhat down the journey, that's great as well. But the IOM report had some important things to say, and they said that interprofessional communication and practice and teamwork has the potential to impact patient safety and the health of the public. And that's a pretty profound statement, that if we can learn to work better as teams and communicate more clearly and effectively, we can have a safer healthcare system. From our perspective, they said simulation is a key methodology to teach this type of work. So, of course, we believe in that strongly. And a third thing was that there's many barriers. So this is not easy work. It requires persistence, communication, collaboration, and negotiation. So the common things that get in our way are insufficient funds. Of course, money is always a challenge, but probably the greatest challenge is incompatible schedules on the academic side and the professional side. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then faculty development, because not only do we have to educate our learners, we need to becoming an interprofessional team because we were not educated as interprofessional teams when we grew up in our education. Lastly, there's no standard methods to do this. So that's a positive and a negative because that means that we can be creative and that we can start in our own context and design something that's going to work in our own space. So you may say, that's great. I think it's a nice idea, but we still need to do education related to our own profession. And the answer is yes, you absolutely need to do domain-specific education, and that's important to continue. And when do you do that? Well, certainly early in the phases of your education, because if I'm a brand new nursing student and I'm put in a team simulation with physicians who are residents and fellows and physical therapists and pharmacists, I don't even know my own identity yet. So it's very difficult for me to learn others. So in the early phases, when we're being socialized into our profession, that's the time for uniprofessional simulation and education. When we're doing psychomotor skills, when you're doing procedures that are unique to your profession, another appropriate time. Individual tasks, and of course, when you are assessing someone's competency. So that should be done, unless you have decided you are assessing interprofessional teamwork, that should be done in individual domain specific. So if you look here, you can sort of see this. We start down here in foundational education, and then as we move through time, and we're in graduate education and then continuing professional development, we have increasing amounts of interprofessional education. So if we practice together, we should be learning together. So for us, is this a new idea in simulation? If you think of us as simulation educators, it's not. And it's been around for a long time in crisis resource management. There have been a number of studies done over the years looking at teamwork skills and attitudes about working together and understanding another profession. It's been done in resuscitation, in a myriad of communication skills, faculty development and simulation instructor courses. So at the Center for Medical Simulation, we've had a commitment to interprofessional education from the beginning. So our teams that we teach with are interprofessional. So Damien and I are a physician and nurse practitioner. We have organizational behavioralists. We have emergency room nurse practitioners, we have education specialists, anesthesiologists, surgeons. We try very carefully to craft groups of faculty teams that teach together that are interprofessional, because we're modeling that we value this. In our clinical courses, we have a mix of professions as well. So it might be obstetrics and anesthesia in a clinical course, learning how to manage obstetric emergencies. So we feel that this is not a new concept, but how we do it and how we think about it is bubbling up to the top. So what exactly are we talking about here when we define the field? So there's interprofessional education, and then there's healthcare simulation, and we are simulation people. And the field is this little slice of commonality where we're doing interprofessional training in the simulation environment. So the interprofessional training in the simulation environment doesn't just limit itself to what you think about a fully immersive, high fidelity simulation. It might be in standardized patient encounters, where a physician goes in with a nurse, or a nurse practitioner goes in, or a midwife goes in, comes out, collaborates with a physician, they both go in and create a plan of care. So there's many different ways to create this learning space. It doesn't just have to be in high fidelity. So as always, in healthcare, there are 1,000 different definitions, and we all look at things from a different perspective. And in an attempt to help us start to be consistent, there are shared definitions now for interprofessional education and simulation. So the book that you see up here, which we're very proud, is one of our wonderful beloved colleagues, Janice Palaganis was one of the editors, has a really well-written chapter on interprofessional education and definitions. So SIMBE, which is simulation-based interprofessional education, means that we as faculty have designed the case where two or more professions are participating in a team and they learn with each other, from each other, and about each other. And the goal, of course, is to improve collaboration and patient safety. Conversely, interprofessional simulation is where two or more professionals learn side by side or together in a simulation, and there's different learning objectives for each profession. So it's kind of like parallel play in the playground. They're in the same space, but they are not learning from and about each other. So to further delineate the differences between these two, that SIMBY has interprofessional objectives. IP SIM has objectives by profession. SIMBY is a course project led by the team, is interprofessional, versus leading one-by-one sequential professions. And again, we've had interprofessional faculty development on the SIMBY side and faculty development by profession on the IP SIM side. So I'll share you a journey that we went on when I worked at Drexel University, which was a private university outside of Philadelphia. So we developed a collaborative between the College of Nursing and the College of Medicine that included obstetrics and gynecology, emergency room physicians, anesthesia, nursing students, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners, with the goal to be creating interprofessional SIMs and the belief that if we practice together, we must learn together. So what we learned from ourselves, even though we had an interprofessional team leading the charge, a year later when we reviewed our cases, we found that we had about 10 objectives for each case that had four or five from each profession, and no one would give up their objectives. And we thought we were collaborating in an interprofessional way. So we also learned that if we had faculty who were debriefing by themselves, so an obstetrics and gynecologist debriefing the case, and the cases were all OB cases in the emergency or operating theater, they only debriefed from their perspective. So the lessons that we learned was that we always had interprofessional debriefers, a nurse and a physician assistant and a nurse. So we mixed and matched our debriefers, so there were multiple perspectives, and we were modeling for our learners that there's an interprofessional team. And it took us an entire year of working together, and then we were able to move to fully integrated interprofessional objectives. But it took time. And these are the publications based on the work that we did. So we found that it did indeed improve people's attitudes and understanding of others' roles and responsibilities. And that's important. In the United States, we often talk about allowing people to practice to the highest level of their license. So allowing people to do as much as they can to contribute to the care of the patient. And conversely, if we're asking people to do things that they shouldn't be doing because it's outside the scope, then that creates a patient safety problem. So here's the good news. There is an entire curriculum already done for you. So in 2011, the core competencies for interprofessional collaborative practice were published. IPEC, I-P-E-C. If you search for that, you will go to a wonderful website that has a myriad of resources. These competencies were revised in 2016. So in the beginning, there were six different professions that worked on it. And on the revision in 2016, there were nine more professions who signed on. So it has from psychologists to veterinarians to surgeons to dentists, nurses, physicians, social workers. So it is truly an interprofessional collaboration. And these are the competency domains that they have defined. So when you design your educational experiences, you're designing based on these competencies. So you can see that it's not just about communication. It's also about valuing and the ethics of interprofessional practice, roles and responsibilities, that I understand what the person next to me is able to do so we can practice together in a safe way. And many times in the United States, we have a lot of different professions and people don't understand the scope of practice. So they either don't allow them to do things they should do, or we ask them to do things that are unsafe. Interprofessional communication and then team and teamwork, with I think we feel good about working in, and we've done that for some time. So these competencies and tools to measure them are available on the website. So this is just a little journey through some of the foundational background information to allow you to be able to look at how can I start to design my educational experiences. And I'm going to turn back over to Damien to walk through his experiences.
So we'll deepen that in a second. First, I'll share that one of the barriers around the schedule pieces, I think, that people don't work out the schedule because they're just not sure whether people are going to get along. Will they want to learn together? What are different professions or professional students' interests? And we were very interested in this in a project that we did at NYU, where we looked at interprofessional teams learning resuscitation skills, learning to work within the context of a new resuscitation model. And in addition to learning that content, they learned to work together. So the really good news that came out of the study is that all of the different domains of teamwork, according to the attitudes questionnaire, improve before and after. So teamwork structure, leadership, situation monitoring, mutual support, and communications improved. And my takeaway from that is that simulation-based interprofessional education, or SIMBE, not only improves the topic, but also the wanting to work and learn together. So really find it worthwhile. Faculty development is a key piece, as Kate mentioned, and both in the introduction and in her example. And with Adam Chang and others, we proposed a way for faculty development, for faculty to improve their skills working with each other, in a paper called Coaching the Debriefer. And I want to walk through one or two concepts from that work to really get concrete about how you might train together once you've launched an interprofessional education program. What we argued in the paper is that peer coaching should happen at various points during the day. So if you have a scenario debriefing, and so forth, that you're going to set the stage with amongst your colleagues to decide how you're going to coach each other, what are the topics you're interested in maturing, and then you're going to quickly do some targeted peer coaching on the go, between cases. And towards the end, a longer, more focused, framework-based exploration of both the content and the structure. And in the paper, we have a checklist of the various domains that you can work with each other, and this is going to be available on the website as well. So there's various domains, but there's two that I think are really relevant to interprofessional education, and I'll highlight that for you. First is the content. So did you achieve the stated objectives? And so if you're working interprofessionally, this is where I think it's really important to review. Kate and I were working with the team. We explored the different roles of the professions. Now it's the debriefing of the debriefing, and we can discuss whether we each thought we have gone into depth, sufficient depth, whether we corrected some of the attitudes or beliefs, whether they were surfaced and to what extent, or whether we have new questions. Maybe there's something for the teachers to learn. And then secondly, it's the way of interacting together, the co-facilitation. And I think here again, there's a second level, because the conflict, productive or not, that might arise amongst healthcare teams might also arise amongst interprofessional teaching teams. And so discussing that process, the working together, is another aspect that I believe is part of building that shared mental model amongst interprofessional educators. And there too, you serve as a model for your learners, the people you're mentoring. So I think that interprofessional education works at two levels, at the learner level and at the faculty level. So it should really potentiate the improvement of collaborative practice if you take it on seriously. There's another paper that Adam and Kate and others wrote that focused on learner-centered debriefing. And I just wanted to highlight the ideas there also apply to the faculty. So that's why that setting of the stage to make sure that the peer coaching and debriefing of the debriefing ends up being relevant and centered around the learner, this time the learner being the faculty. And that paper and others are available on this wonderful resource, debrieftolearn.org, which is a free website that Adam and Walter Epic and myself, Jenny, Kate, and others have been contributing to, and we would invite you to download some of those resources there. So I'd like to now return to the good judgment approach to interprofessional education, or the good judgment approach to simulation-based interprofessional education, because we've talked about the stance of curiosity and respect, and now that we have surfaced the interprofessional education curriculum, then we can get curious about that. And using that strategy of advocacy inquiry, because as professionals, like as you demonstrated in your earlier exercise, you're looking at the world or at your clinical environment or at your simulation session and the performance of your learners through your particular lens, in this case, a periscope, with a rather narrow field of view. Your field, your professional field of view. And you need other periscopes in the room, that interprofessional debriefing team, to be able to make sure that you're not missing other activities and things that are happening. Thing one. Thing two, I mentioned we were very interested in people's drivers of the behavior. What is going on in their mind that's not visible? Because some things are visible. What might that be? The title, Dr. Shield. The profession. I'm an emergency physician, and I would introduce myself as such. And I might even say, okay, I'm going to be the team leader. So these are the visible aspects. They're above the surface. The role, team leader, IV access, airway, I'll be the surgeon, etc. The dress codes, the activities that we perform, what's expected of. But under the surface, not visible, are the ideas that are germane to that profession, the values, the attitudes, the ethics principles, the culture of that department, the whole person, if you will. You don't see that if you're only looking through your periscope and see this particular professional in front of you. So what to do? The good judgment approach is essentially a submarine that lets you see inside underneath the surface and helps you surface through advocacy inquiry what is not visible, what's hidden to you. And I'd like to therefore show you that you can now adapt what you know as advocacy into an interprofessional advocacy where you might suggest a topic. I'd like to talk about how you all left the room after that resuscitation. I saw that there was materials on the floor and a central line catheter kit sitting on top of the bin and some tape on the back of the room. And as a physician, I thought this must mean you guys worked hard and that the patient did well and that there was probably very good teamwork. So I'm putting my, making explicit my professional point of view here, describing the periscope to which I'm holding. And then I'm going to add one more step for you here, which is the getting curious, the inquiry, the asking, in this case, the interprofessional inquiry to say, I wonder your perspective as a respiratory therapist, as a nuclear plant operator. I was wondering, how do you see it? Not too hard, right? So in your practice team, return to your to the exercise. Now that you're tooled up with this new tool, so I'm leaving on the screen, and I'd like you to try that out to see how it goes. Ready? We'll give you about 5 minutes to practice that, and then we'll get us together here. Okay, so my belief and hope is that this new sharper form of interprofessional advocacy inquiry helped you surface some new interesting aspects, and so I'm wondering if anybody would share what are some of the new discoveries now that you tried out this new version. In the middle, in the second row.
I'm a nurse and anesthetist, and I would like to know how can different categories of staffs work together with sterile equipment when they put it on a bin. I mean, it's strange. I mean, there is no work plan for the physicians and the nurses. Either they had like a rolling table, something that they could roll around. Otherwise, I don't know where they put things, where they lay down their things.
Okay, wonderful advocacy inquiry. And did you get the answer from your colleagues? And I like your question. I'm wondering if you got an answer from your colleagues.
As a pilot, I see like a cockpit after a depressurization. I'd like to know, as a doctor, what were your difficulties? What is the reason I can see this like that?
Uh-huh. Great. So I'd like to ask if you're willing, rather than share the question, I'm really interested to see the result of your question, to find out what you learned by getting curious and talking to someone from the other profession. So it might sound like the question I heard here, which was, as a nurse anesthetist, I saw all these things and no table, and I think that not having a place to work could really get in your way, and so I'm looking for perhaps an emergency nurse or an emergency physician, someone there to say, oh, well, let me share with you why this might work for me. So I'd love to hear from anybody if there was such a conversation where you learned about another perspective based on your question. Maybe over here. It's always nice to have friends in the audience.
Et thank you, Damien. Bon, je vais parler en français.
I'll speak French. Probably there were not enough tables. And everything was just thrown on the floor or put on the bins because they didn't have enough space around them, probably.
The way we worked at in this hospital, we were lucky to have many, many, many interested students and residents. And when there's a big case, there's a lot of people there. And there's just not enough space for the table to accommodate for all the people. So the table would be getting in the way, and they think it's efficient to use the multiple resources. Well, anyways, we wanted to give you an opportunity to practice on a case that is dear to me, and that you got a chance to check out the good judgment approach to interprofessional education. My sense as simulation educators is that you are the man behind the curtain, the person behind the curtain. You're behind the simulation curtain when you're operating the case. But as Kate and I described or tried to, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work to get your interprofessional education teams talking to each other, learning together from and with each other to prepare this. And so I think other visions of interprofessional educators besides being behind the curtain, the way I see myself and would hope that you would see yourself is as a leader, someone who's trying to change the environment and the culture and how we work and collaborate together. Someone who's really conquering changing the way things are at the local and global level. So thank you very much for letting us come to Normandy to share some of our ideas. I hope that you will reflect on some of this material and would be very interested to take some more questions or your takeaways here. Please additionally be in touch with us. Feel free to answer anything by email. As you know, my French is not great, but I'd be happy to try it. And thank you again very much. Merci beaucoup. And really to you, any questions you might have. Questions, comments? I will listen in French and English.
Y a-t-il des questions? Profitez-en.
Michel Vagnon, an emergency physician. How to avoid boring for the participant for always the same question of inquiry, advocacy inquiry during perhaps one journey of simulation with six or seven scenarios and always perhaps the same sentence, or to avoid a boring.
How to avoid a boring debrief?
Yeah.
I think it, so always an interesting question because we want to make these experiences stimulating and get people activated. I think it's creating the opportunity for them to interact as a team. So what does that mean? So it may mean that an embedded participant, an embedded actor, has the piece of information that's the solution to the problem. So if there is a nurse in the room that has the piece of information that will help them solve the clinical problem, and they never ask that nurse because they don't inquire how other people see it, then that becomes a very interesting debriefing because they had the answer in front of them. So it's thinking ahead to try and create the situations where they have to interact or there's the ability to find the right answer, but it requires interaction as an entire team.
And adding to what Kate is saying with that case in mind, I think in the good judgment approach, how to keep it interesting and fun is by being provocative in your point of view, by sharing your assumptions and challenging theirs. So if they say, well, only the nurse had the answer and there was no way we could have known that the potassium had already been checked, that wasn't a priority. We couldn't have known that. Then as a debriefer to say, hold on, I hear you say that and I think you could have known that. You could have simply asked everybody, does anybody have any relevant information? And I think that would have worked better. What was your thoughts about that? So I think it's not to change the speech pattern, but to have the courage to really challenge the learner, to not challenge them, but challenge them to think with you.
To challenge their assumptions of how they think about other team members.
In the submarine, to raise them out of the water.
To raise the level. So you are being spicy and pushing back.
Thank you for the question. Other comments or questions?
So thank you so much for your presentation. I have a question because there is now a huge challenge about interprofessional simulation. And it's quite easy about professional, about healthcare provider, but it's very difficult for students because we have a greater wide range of nurses, about 1,000, about medical students, only 80, and residents, maybe 50, and we cannot make a simulation for everybody, or how can I do that, or how do you do that? Thank you.
So I have an experience with this because we had the same problem at NYU. We had 400 nursing students and 100 medical students, and we developed an interprofessional program which is freely available online. It's called NYU3T, Teamwork, Teaching, and Technology. And it was a hybrid, an interprofessional learning online followed by optional simulation sessions. So optional really helped do some of that. The ratio of one or two medical students to two or three or four nursing students still worked, especially if you had multiple cases where some professions had to take turns. And online, I thought we were pretty creative, and we wrote about this. In the subsequent years of the program, we used some of the medical student responses and created artificially intelligent ghost students. And the learning was just as good in teams that had real students or ghost students. So some ideas on how to tackle that problem. I think I'm a very positive person. I'm focusing on solutions rather than the problems, and trying to shift from IP sim to SIMBY. Finally, if it's that good, people will repeat. So you could always have people learn twice if you really have a mismatch. Maybe one more, and then we'll hand off to
Dr. Yes, I've got one for you both.
Oh?
Okay, Damien.
Okay. There's a hand here, too. Go ahead.
Okay. There is, I guess, maybe you start to practice simulation before using good judgment approach. So what, in a short summarize, you could characteristics, good judgment approach improvement in your global simulation experience?
How good judgment improved or shifted our experience?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think absolutely. I started before I learned how to debrief with good judgment. And what it did is it really deepened the debriefing. So it put them at the level of challenging beliefs that people had that perhaps they weren't even aware that they had or held about other professions, as opposed to just telling people, this went well, this we could have done differently, and everybody leaves. This allowed us to get deeper into the things that we hold within us that affect our behavior that perhaps we don't even recognize. So I think it creates deeper learning and the opportunity for people to change how they think, because if we don't ask and learn what it is that's driving how they think, then we have very little chance of changing that.
Yeah, I would echo and build on that to say the interprofessional, the IPEC competencies that we shared, when you look at them, they're very behavior-based. And I think there's a big trend in healthcare education, competency-based medical education, to focus on what people can do only or broadly, and then the exams for knowledge. And there's a lot of thought processes that are important in between knowledge and application, and I think that's the kind of deepening that I also experienced in applying this approach, and that's why we thought to show you some of the what is simulation based in the professional education, and then how the good judgment approach takes it those steps further. Thanks for the question, and thanks everybody for your attention. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to
thank you very much.